Coming out tonight is a brand new movie. Some of you may have seen the previews of it, Woodlawn. It is a true story, fascinating movie. I've had the opportunity to see it a number of times. And this is really an outgrowth of the conservative movement, of Council on National Policy, of those that have been working in Hollywood that are in our midst, Ted Baer and others who have been taking that conservative message and reinforcing with the fact that those are the movies that produce at the box office. Now, it might not be what draws the liberals out to celebrate, but they celebrate those movies that actually lose money. I guess that's the same reason liberals run the country. It loses money when they run it. But today we have John Irwin, who is the partner and co-founder, along with his brother Andrew, the Irwin brothers. He is the writer and producer and director of a number of really good movies. October Baby came out in 2012. You may be familiar with that one. And one of my favorites, I laughed so hard I hurt. That was Mom's Night Out, because it looked like our household. And then this movie that comes out tonight is Woodlawn, which is a true story. And it's so timely, and I don't want to take John's message away from it, but it's very timely in that it comes out. It's about racial reconciliation in Birmingham during the issue of segregation. And the key to bringing unity was the gospel of Jesus Christ. And it's a true story, couldn't be more timely for our nation. And John has also been involved in numerous music bands in terms of directing music videos with Casting Crowns, Amy Grant, Third Day, Point of Grace, Nicole Mullen, and Group One Crew, among other notable Christian artists. Please welcome John Irwin.
Hey, guys. I'm glad to be here. I don't know if you've made a huge mistake. You should set your expectations really low for this one, because I was a homeschool, conservative, Southern Baptist homeschooled Republican kid that lied about his age to work for ESPN as a cameraman when I was 15 and kind of never looked back. I'm not saying that was the right thing to do. It just happened. So me on this stage, I don't know if this is a good idea. I don't know what you've gotten yourself into, Tony. I would like to start, I would like to say with Woodlawn, I'm most excited about sharing with you something that has happened, that is happening all over the country. It's really, really cool. And Glenn did a wonderful piece on this, and I'd like to just make you aware of it. So I think I'd like to roll that video, and then I'm just going to share with you all I have, which is my story and my dream. So check this out.
We're all searching for answers. Our country seems to be burning down. Our world is burning down. Hatred is on the rise. Division. So why would I tell you about a new movie coming out? Well, because it seems to be more than a movie. Woodlawn is an incredible new movie coming to theaters nationwide October 16th. It's a true story of the power of love and unity that conquered racism and hatred. In the midst of an impossible situation in Birmingham, Alabama, nearly 40 years ago, at a high school destined to be closed because of violence from forced integration, a spiritual awakening swept the school and changed everything. Now, so many years later, as we deal with exactly the same issues, with the same prejudice, the same questions, we ask ourselves, can it ever change? Is there any hope? All over the country, in advanced screenings, something has begun. When young people see this movie, they're making an extraordinary decision. It's being dubbed the Woodlawn Decision. A public choice to love God and to love each other. In Memphis, 40 football players stood. In Amarillo, Texas, half of those attended stood up. 125 players stood for Christ, for love, and for unity. The movie is stirring college teams like Temple and Ole Miss.
I think it was all just divine how we seen that movie. None of us had any idea that it was a Christian film. We just thought it was an inspirational football film.
And look what happened at a Prestonwood Baptist church in Dallas, Texas.
There are some young men and women and some adults in this room who want to take a stand. You want to make that decision for Christ that we saw in the movie. You may be the only one in this room that does it. you do that right now? Entire teams are making their way. It's better than winning a ball game.
I know we're all searching for answers, but let me give you one more question. What if what happened at Woodlawn High School so many years ago could actually happen 1,000 times over with 1,000 teams and 1,000 classrooms in 1,000 schools all over the country when Woodlawn releases nationwide October 16th? What if a revolution of love and unity began to conquer the hatred and division in America? What if we all stormed theaters together? What if we all took our families, our churches, and our football teams? What if, together, we turned a movie into a movement of reconciliation in America?
Thank you. Appreciate it. It's just an incredible true story, and it's so amazing to see some of the same things that we're wrestling with. You know, history has indeed kind of repeated itself, and I hope that Woodlawn can serve as a beacon of what the real answer is. And it's cool to see teams all over the country, large groups of kids, deciding to love God and love each other. And by the way, I think the idea that we would somehow take that away, I don't know if there's anybody that's helping, you know, Coach Joe out in Washington, but I can't believe that things like that are happening. Why would we take away what works? I did an interview with the Washington Post yesterday, and we dialogued about this quite a bit, and that was, why would we take away what works? This clearly works. And we stand with him, and I don't know what all we can do, but I've got 1 million fans in my back, and we want to do whatever we can to stand with him and what he's going through, because it is the theme of the movie. I just want to share just briefly about my story and a dream that God's given me that I'm going to share with you. It's all I have. Again, you can set your expectations low. I have no right to follow presidential candidates and the like. But I do have a dream, and my story, I'm born and raised in Birmingham, Alabama. I love Alabama. I'm not an LA guy. I'm not insulting anybody that's from LA. I do think it's the capital of narcissism in the whole world, but there's some great people, Ted Bears here and some others, there's some great people making a difference. But you could buy every billboard in LA and put the words, get over yourself, and it would be a worthy spend of money. So I don't live there. I live in Birmingham. And where I'm born and raised. And when I was 12, my dad gave me a camera, and I was fascinated with it. And we began interning in a cable station, and really fell in love with that. And then when I was 15, somebody got sick at a University of Alabama football game for ESPN, and I was apprenticing under a cameraman named Mike. And Mike called me. I'm not recommending this story. I'm not saying it was right. Again, it just happened. But Mike called me and said, John, get over here. Don't tell anybody how old you are. Don't tell anybody you've never done this before. So again, I'm this conservative, you know, Southern Baptist Republican homeschool kid, and drove to Alabama. My dad dropped me off 4 blocks away because I didn't want anybody to know I couldn't drive at the time. And I went and ran this camera. And the camera was like this big. It was huge, huge camera. And I was used to cameras that were smaller. And if you've seen football games, they're like a telescope. And you can zoom into a quarter of the moon. So I was this little kid zooming in and out of the moon with this camera saying, this is the coolest thing I've ever done in my life, you know. And I just had a blast. I fell in love with the adrenaline of it and had a great time. And in God's providence, you know, Birmingham is right in the middle of the SEC, the greatest conference. And it was right in the middle of the SEC, and so there's games everywhere, and so I got a phone call from a crewing agent, and she said, are you a freelance camera operator in Birmingham? I'd never heard those three words together, so I said, yeah, that's what I do. I do that all the time for a living. I'll just say it again. I need to hear it again, and so I went and did a game at Auburn, and so by the time I was 16, Andy and I were pretty much, my brother and I were pretty much working full-time for ESPN on the weekends. My dad bought us a camera. And we started a hobby that just went out of control and still going out of control to this day. We started doing videos for our church and local ministries like Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And one thing led to another. And then the Christian artist Michael W. Smith gave us a break to do a music video for him, and that video did very well. And we started doing music video after music video after music video, won a lot of awards, doing a lot of national car commercials and stuff like that, just making a living. And then there was a question that ruined me, just ruined me, and it's a great question, and I think everybody should ask it. I went down to work on the Christian film Courageous, and thank you. Yeah, it's a great movie. It's not my movie, but I am in a business where you constantly take credit for other people's work, so I will take that. And so, at any rate, I went out and worked on this movie, Courageous, and they wanted me. I directed second unit because they had a lot of action scenes. It was a cop movie, and I love blowing things up and doing chase sequences on kids. One of my favorite things to do, and so I was very prone to the tight work they needed. And then Alex, the director of that film, asked me, "John, what's your purpose and the purpose of your work?" And I couldn't answer the question. And not only could I not answer the question, I couldn't stop thinking about the question. You know, what I, to that point, Andy and I were like the Han Solo of the Christian world. It's like, if you have money, we have a ship, we'll fly you somewhere, you pay us, and that's it. The rest is your problem. We were just hired guns, you know. And so I really, that question sunk deep into my mind, and that led to the film October Baby, which was also my entry into the CNP as a member. I appreciate that. Thank you. To Penny, if she's in the room, thank you for getting me in here undeservingly. But the film was a success financially, but it also started changing lives and even saving lives all over America. And we began to understand the power that film and media has in shaping a generation. And as we began to understand that power, it was just incredible to start hearing stories of lives saved, of post-abortive women and even men finding forgiveness and hope. I remember a guy that was bigger than I was coming up to me saying, I paid for an abortion 20 years ago. I feel forgiven for the first time in my life, and I've never told anybody. Or a little 12-year-old little boy came up to me and said, your movie changed my life. And I literally said to him, I think you probably watched a different movie. I think you probably were in Pirates of the Caribbean. Thank you, but I don't think you watched my movie. And he said, my dad has done some things that hurt my mom, and I'm going home to forgive my father. And these things started happening, and I told people there was no going back. I said, I can't go back to spending $9,000 in one day for hair extensions for a country artist to make her look nothing like she looks like in real life. Like, I can't do that anymore, you know? I've tasted a calling instead of a career. And then that led to Mom's Night Out. And Tony, thank you that your family loves that movie. That's great. And I tell people I'm blessed to, I think, have made the world's most expensive Hallmark card for my wife and everyone like her, and then to Woodlawn. But what I've realized along the way is something that has given me a dream. What I didn't expect with October Baby, and what I'd like to just tell you about, what the incredible moment in time that we're living in and the incredible opportunities that are happening right now. I'm optimistic. I'm really optimistic about our country, about a generation, and about the changes we can make in it over the next decade. And thank you. If somebody wasn't clapping for me or just tripped, I'll still take credit for that. I work in a business where I take credit for everything. But at any rate, I think great things can happen. And what happened with October Baby is we started hearing stories not only from America, but all over the world, from Russia, China, South Africa, Bali, Ukraine, and it was amazing. We had no expectation of this. We didn't even understand what was going on. And then we stepped back and thought, wait, how much of my time did it take to take this message that I was so passionate about all over the world? It didn't take any of my time. The system did it for me. The entertainment mechanism did it for me. How much of my money did it take? No, they paid me. Foreign distributors paid me. So this is kind of this Trojan horse autopilot of our world, you know, of our worldview and values thing. And we began a 2-year research project to say, how far could you scale this? We've tasted just a little bit of it. How big could it scale? How big could it grow? What could you do with this? And the results are pretty amazing, and we're chasing them with all we have with Woodlawn. So let me just share some of them with you. Not many people know some of this, but there's 10 movie theaters opening every day in China. It's the largest expansion in the history of my business. Worldwide, there's about a 30% increase in box office over the last 5 years because more people are living in cities. I cannot say this word, than rural areas. Rural, that's the hardest. I had to kind of cleanse my, we were known as Bubba 1 and Bubba 2 when we worked for ESPN. And so I had to kind of get rid of the accent, but it sticks on some, anyway, like words like rural, which I can't say. More people are living in cities than than ever before, right? And there's more cell phones now as of last year than people on the earth, 7.3 billion mobile devices. In places like Africa, the people using those cell phones have more access to mobile data than they do drinking water. So the world is more connected and people are living in cities. And so with that is coming this explosion in entertainment infrastructure, okay? And basically, I was at Liberty University like 2 hours ago in convocation. We've been going and I'm not quite awake. I've only had one cup of coffee. I'm sorry. But more people live in cities than rural areas. And so we asked, what do they watch? They're watching movies. What do they watch? And what we learned is they watch American movies. People are learning how to consume entertainment in America and around the world faster than ever before, but they haven't learned to create it. That belongs to us. But it belongs to this very specific category of American movies. We call them blockbusters. If you work a bullseye, if you think about the outer rim of a bullseye, we think there's as many as 20,000 movies made every year around the world. Staggering amount of movies. And then if you get down, you know, pretty much there's only about 150 movies a year that make what October Baby made more than $5 million in box office. It was a Cinderella story. It was financially viable. It had impact. Thank you. But we can't stop there. We have to dream bigger. Today we have to dream big. If you go to the top 30 American movies, blockbusters, those 30 American movies are doing 60% of all business in America, but they're doing 40% of all business worldwide. Staggering, staggering that this small group of American movies are doing nearly half the business all over the globe. In my opinion, this is the most advanced form of communication ever invented. I think other groups have showed us over the past 25 years the sheer power of the arts to shape a generation and the way they feel, which in turn changes the way they think. And so we asked the question, because I'm uncontrollably curious by nature. I had to do kindergarten twice because I was labeled ADHD and a disturbance to the class. They were all like, everyone else just go, John, you stay here because everybody else needs to learn. But I'm uncontrollably curious. I asked the question, is this possible? Could there be a Christian block? Could a movie by a Christian with an overt Christian worldview, independent of the system, be a blockbuster? And we started studying it. And the answer is yes. The answer is absolutely yes. We can do it. We can absolutely do it. It's possible. We have everything we need. This room could change the world, right? We have everything we need. We have enough people. We have enough resources. We just have not had a unified strategy, and we have not had the will. And so we're going after it, and it would take three things that need to change. And I think those three things are holding back the church, Christians, the Republican Party. I think it's the same three things. Fascinating. So I'll go over them with you very quick. I don't know if there's a clock, so just yank me off the stage. At any rate, the first is this. I had an investor's wife that said, John, when you're talking about this crazy blockbuster thing, aren't they tough to make? Aren't blockbusters tough to make? And I said, absolutely. I said, there's a famous filmmaker that said, if we knew how to make hit films, that's all we'd make. Like, there's no blueprint for this stuff, right? And so it's art. But I told her this. I said, look, I don't know how long it'll take to figure this out, but I know as Americans, that's what we do. We figure things out. You know, we innovate. We are the innovators. But I told her this. I said, look, if we don't aim for it, we'll never hit it. What has to change first is how we view ourselves. And as long as we think we're not capable of something, then we won't be. And as long as we think that this can never happen or we're niche or we're in this kind of cultural ghetto or we're defeated or we've lost a generation, as long as we think those things, we'll make them true. We've got to change how we view ourselves. We're still a huge group in America, right? And as a Christian, look, my Bible says, on this rock, I'll build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it, right? I believe that. And I believe it now in America. And I think that verse shows something very, very interesting. A gate is not an offensive weapon. Nobody's going to throw a gate at you. Nobody's going to attack you with a gate. That's a defensive mechanism. We're built for offense. We're not built for defense. as Christians, we're built for offense. And it's time we start getting aggressive and playing offense again. And so we need to believe, thank you, I'll take credit for that one. I love the Bot Radio Network, by the way. I planted that. I gave him a $20 bill. I'm kidding. And so we got to change the way we think about ourselves. We've got to stop believing what culture and the media is saying about us and believe what God says about us. And when we start believing that that's true, we'll start acting as if it's true. The first thing that needs to change is how we view ourselves. The second thing that needs to change, just briefly, if you think in business about an S-curve, diffusion of innovation, you know, there's four groups in any product lifecycle. You have an early adopter. They're typically cause-driven. They buy Blu-ray players when it's like $2,000 and there's two movies on it, right? Then you have an early market. They're more pragmatic, like me. I'll buy a Blu-ray player when it's $200 and everything I want is on it. I'm selfish. It's all about what the product can do for me. Then you have a late market. Then you have laggards. Laggards buy a Blu-ray player when the world doesn't sell VHS anymore, you know, and they're old. And so that's typically a product life cycle. Well, those two groups, an early adopter and early market, there's a book called Crossing the Chasm, just a business book, but it helped me understand what's wrong with Christian film in many ways. And I think the body of Christ in general, those two groups are different. They typically herd together and they typically don't like each other. And that's very true in Christian film. In Christian film, an early adopter is cause-driven, as we've built the model. An early adopter wants a bold message, a bold presentation of values or the gospel. Because any time an audience is underserved or oppressed and you speak for that audience, they show up, right? And I tell people, this is how my parents go see God's Not Dead and come out calling it the greatest movie ever made. I'm like, to their son that's also a filmmaker. I'm like, thanks, Dad. I'm trying to. But anyway, got a couple of Tony likes my movies anyway, but at any rate, they like them too. But because it speaks for them, and it speaks for them with a reckless abandonment that they want, right? Then you come over on my side of the fence to an early adopter, or to an early market, and I'm selfish, and film is my escape, and I need three things when I consume entertainment. I would like to see my worldview represented. I need that. It's underrepresented, and entertainment has lost its mind. I don't want to be offended. I don't want to cover my eyes or ears or my kids' eyes or ears. But at the end of the day, I want to be entertained. Well, guess what dominates my behavior when you study it? The need to be entertained. In fact, I will sacrifice the other two on some level, and so will most of us. I'll watch things that offend me on some level that have no representation in my worldview on this altar of being entertained and belonging, being a part of the cultural conversation. And so we're at war with each other. And my audience will lob these cannonballs with our hipster magazines, and we use words like cultural ghetto. And my parents with radio programs will fire these cannonballs back. Their favorite term is carnal Christian or sellout or whatever. And what we fail to realize is that we're consuming the exact same product for two different reasons, and there's nothing wrong with either reason. It's just different. So the first thing that needs to change is how we view ourselves. The second thing that needs to change is we're fighting each other. We have to remember right now that a house divided against itself cannot stand. And Paul said these words in Scripture. He said, if you bite and devour each other, be careful that you're not consumed by each other. And we're fighting each other and we're losing a generation in the midst of it. Literally, an entire generation. We have to stop fighting. And we have to remember who the real enemy is. And we're very good at fighting each other inside the church and inside our party. So we're asking the question with Woodlawn, what if you could do both? Because there's this line of thinking that you can only do one or the other, that you can only make a film for a very little budget that boldly proclaims a message, or if you launch out in the deep waters, you have to jettison the message completely, and Jesus has to become a positive worldview or whatever. So on the back of Woodlawn, this is this grand idea, what if we could do both? And what if we could make a movie that proclaims boldly, with reckless abandon, a worldview, but it's also, as much as we can make it, wildly entertaining? And what if we could spend more? So yes, believe me, I go to sleep at night scared out of my mind. The $25 million that it took to make and market Woodlawn is a lot of money. And it's more than most Christian films spend. A lot more. But, in my opinion, this is the way we have to look at it. It's only a third of what 50 Shades of Grey spent to get to a generation. We have got to ask how much we care. We're being outgunned 100-1 for the attention of a generation. And we've got to go start competing on their turf and beating them at their own game. And I think we can do it. And I think we can do it together. There are enough of us. If we could unify, if you could get those two groups together, the last time we saw the true power of a unified church was The Passion of the Christ. And people forget that it's the number one rated R movie of all time, number one independent movie of all time. All right? So what would happen? This is where it gets really exciting, and then I'll leave. What would happen if those two groups unified? If we could stop fighting, and me and my parents could get together on the same thing at the same time. This is pretty cool when you talk about a late market that follows me, a third group. There's a group leaving the church, 70% millennials leaving the church. A lot of times the university system wants to deconstruct their worldview, so they leave as a spiritually engaged high schooler, and they leave church. They have, typically, you would get married, and you would have kids, and how many of you know that's when you really start coming back to church? Like, help me with it. I don't know how to do this. You know, and it's like why I made Mom's Night Out. Everybody's like, the stuff that happened with the dads in that movie can't be true. And I'm like, yeah, it all is. It all definitely is for me. And it happened. Actually, it's totally fictional, and I've got my act together as a dad. But here's the problem. They're not getting married, and they're not growing up, so they're not coming back. If you look at Call of Duty video game ads on television, they're like 30-year-old men. You know, like there's a generation that hasn't grown up. And so they're staying gone. 70% of a generation's leaving. If you study another group called frequent moviegoers, buy about 60% of movie tickets. They only represent 14% of the population. That is about 40 million people buying 800 million movie tickets, about 20 each. All right? You know what motivates their behavior? It's fascinating. It's scary. This little thing called FOMO. Anybody know what that means? The fear of missing out dominates their behavior. You wanna get a frequent moviegoer to go see a movie? Just talk to them about a movie they haven't seen. They won't be able to sleep at night. They'll be texting all their friends, what is this? You know, and they'll go see it the next morning, right? And my business preys on that, manipulates a generation. Talk about sheep with no shepherd. People are like, what business do you work in? I'm like, I work in the business of mass manipulation. That's entertainment, right? And it has no conscience. This business, the agenda of this business is not, in my opinion, the biggest problem. It's there, but this business has no conscience. Somehow, it's just jettisoned its conscience. They'll make anything that sells, no matter what it does to people. And I think when you see the kind of things, the kind of mass violence, and you see, you know, a kid in a courtroom with just a glazed look over his face, that kind of mass desensitization is in part attributed to my business and because of what we're doing. And so the business has no soul, really. But we can use this. If enough of us could unify, if enough of us could get together, if we could stop fighting with each other, and we could get a little bold and get a little aggressive and dream a little big and take a few risks, then we could get a generation back by sheer curiosity through the fear of missing out. And then this is the coolest thing, because I love to think about the world. I think we're supposed to do that. If we could cross a certain level of success, there's this thing called output deals. And this is really cool. Netflix paid me about $600,000 to put October Baby in their library. Now, I did not have to have an ideological debate with Netflix. I remember when I did NPR Morning Edition, the way I heard the first question on October Baby, it probably wasn't, but was like, so John, how do you sleep at night making this anti-abortion propaganda? And I was like, wow, I didn't know that's what I did. You know, it was quite a punch in the face, right? But I didn't have to have an ideological debate with Netflix. No, I distributed through Samuel Goldwyn Films. Samuel Goldwyn has an output deal, right, with Netflix. So not only does Netflix have to take it, they have to pay for it, they have to give it the same platform. Foreign distribution works the same way. Now it only works on our biggest movies, blockbusters, okay? So there's a way, if we could dream big enough, if we could achieve something big enough, that we could force the gospel to the world, that we could force our worldview to America and to the world in a way the world could not refuse. They might be able to stop a coach from praying on a football field, but they cannot stop my movie, you know? And they can't stop movies like it. We can use this. We can use this if we dream big enough together. So Woodlawn is the first grand experiment in that direction and in that dream. And there was a USA Today article yesterday. I'm so glad they used it. We are pioneers. You know, Amy Grant and Michael W. Smith, the music artists that gave me my break, and they were pioneers. And there wasn't a Christian music industry. They created it. Now there's a space for kids to exist. And Sean Astin told me yesterday, or a few days ago in USA Today quoted it. He said, John, I see you and Andy as frontiersmen. I said, that's exactly what I want to be. I want to blaze a trail for others. And he said, well, you know, the trouble is most frontiersmen die on the frontier. And I'm like, I haven't really thought of that. But it might happen. But we're climbing this mountain. I don't know how long it'll take. Of the one or two dozen of us that are involved in this business that are kind of these initial pioneers, I don't know which one of us will summit this mountain, but I'm telling you, we're climbing this mountain and we're going to get to the top and we're going to do it together. And that's what makes me excited, because I think there's a way to share our worldview faster and wider than it has ever been shared before. And I'm serious. In the history, I believe this generation of Christians can do more than every other generation before because of technology. There's this little verse in Matthew 24 where Jesus says, you know, I'm no scholar, barely graduated high school. And so the end times, that's a whole other subject matter. And, you know, I'm Southern Baptist and was forced to read all Left Behind books. But Matthew 24 does say this. It says, this gospel will be proclaimed to the entire world, to every nation, as a testimony. And then the end will come. That's the last thing. And I told the kids at Liberty this morning and a few weeks ago at their convocation, do you realize that this is the first generation that has that legitimate opportunity? We can take our message to the entire world. So what we say is we hold the message as sacred, absolutely. Not the mechanism of delivery. One changes, one does not, right? I think I got this wrong. But one, the message never changes, right? Truth never changes. Truth is not, there is simply right and there is simply wrong, and that is the way it is, right? And that does not change. But the mechanism of delivering truth constantly changes. So we're in this thing of constantly taking what never changes and using ways to take what... Is that clock right? I just want to make sure.
Well, the end is almost here, but not yet.
Okay, sounds good. I'm going by that, but you can yank me off at any point in time.
Well, we want to take a couple of questions.
Oh, good. Okay, so I'll wrap up. So here's what we're doing. We want to harness this new mechanism of delivery. Okay? Just like radio, just like television, just like the printing press, just like Martin Luther's translation of the Bible, all the way back to the Roman road. Think about it. Rome built roads for military expansion, for commerce. We didn't build them, but they were there, and we used them. So the gospel went out first century of the Roman road. And in my opinion, this is the Roman road of the 21st century. And I think we can take this hill together, and I think we can do it now. I don't think anything stops us except the way we think about ourselves, unity, and I think we have to take responsibility. I need to say this. We've got to stop complaining. We've got to stop blaming everything that's wrong on other people, on other groups. I think a lot of it's our fault. I think we've abandoned the playing field. And if it's our fault, it's ours to fix. And so I think that we can take it back. And I dream of a moment of unity and purpose, and for us to get aggressive again and play offense. That's what we're doing with Woodlawn. I ask you to support it. And if you I know you guys are very busy and you're here this weekend. If you haven't seen it, I'll see if FRC and everybody could send you an email. And if you respond to it, I could certainly get you a private link to view the movie. I know your schedules are busy, although I would love for you to go to a theater. That helps my children be able to go to college. But if you can't, I can send you a link. Anyway, God bless you. Thank you for having me. I love CMP. Take care.
We have just a few moments, and we may have time for just a couple of short questions. No documentaries, but a couple of questions if you want to ask a question. If you have a question for John, raise your hand. We'll bring a microphone to you.
John, Kelly Shackelford with Liberty Institute back here. You mentioned Coach Joe twice, and I just want to tell you, we're representing him.
Right.
And he's going tonight to pray, and he might be fired as a result of it, but we sent them a letter saying if he's fired, we will sue them. So everybody needs to be praying for Coach Joe, but I think it's a great example.
Well, I'll tell you this.
Somebody with courage.
It is, and it's interesting how much it's represented in the film. That very theme is in the
right.
film. So it's fascinating to me. But please let him know that we stand with him. Amen. And I've got a million people in my back, and we all stand with him. And his salary's not a problem. Like, however we can support him and whatever we can do, we all have a team. My team's right now about a million people. And we stand with him. So let us know what we can do.
Well, an atheist just wrote an editorial in the newspaper there that said that if my son had a coach, this is the coach I would want.
Wow.
Because of the courage and the character he's showing. So he's already having a gospel influence. And it's not only him that's going, it's his players for the other team. All kinds of people have started to go to the center of field now after the games and pray.
That's incredible. Right. We stand with him. Thank you.
All right, we got time for one more question.
John Linwood Bragan from Double Oak Community Church in Birmingham.
All right.
And we go to church together, y'all. But I just want to thank you for the impact that it's having on the city. And I graduated a year later from high school, and remember the game, remember everybody turning out for it, and the fact of the impact that you're having back home again, and so many churches are unified. Folks, this is a clarion call that John's giving us, and it's already impacting our hometown. And just keep up the great work, and pump them out again and again. I'm with Tony, Mom's Night Out, which I didn't see the beginning of the movie, and suddenly looked up and went, wait a minute, that's my hometown in this flick. And I was recognizing the scenes and settings and all. You're doing great work.
Thank you.
We just appreciate it.
Well, we love Birmingham. And I will tell you this. It was Pastor Michael Catt of Sherwood. Sure, you know, they make courageous. And he said last summer to me, we were thinking about waiting a long time to make Woodlawn. He said, John, I think you need to go make this movie right now. I think America's going to be ready for this movie now. Who knew how prophetic that would be? Who knew that Ferguson would be happening as we were shooting the movie? We had an actor, Marcus from Ferguson, and we said, look, we'll redo the whole schedule if you need to go home. He's crying on set one day because it was also happening so close to his parents. And he said, no, this is why we're making this movie. This is the answer. And to think about all the things that have happened since. I remember talking with Governor Mike Huckabee last year, and his life was really rocked in that time that became, I did it again, they became known as the Jesus Movement. And I said, how much did desperation have to do with what happened in your generation? And he said, it was everything. And I said, I feel that desperation returning. In the first time in my lifetime, I feel like a generation's ready. I feel like this is our 1968. And if you'll notice, the May issue of Time Magazine, Baltimore, and it had America 1968 scratched out by 2015. So please, you have influence, you have real power. Do not miss this moment. No. God is doing something extraordinary in this moment right now. We can't do anything about the past. It's done. But we can change the future. And we can change it together, and we can change it right now. Thank you. God bless.
Good job. John Irwin, thank you so much. And I would, again, I highly recommend the movie. I've seen it multiple times, and it's one of those movies when you're not only entertained with the storyline, but you leave encouraged and inspired, which is something that we just don't get much of anymore.